From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
We were all so lonely, and then by a miracle, we found each other.
Rose, we both answered an ad to share Blanche's house that we found in the supermarket. It was not the resurrection. It is hardly a miracle.
To me, it was a miracle, because we're happy.
Oh, the Golden Girls, that fabulous 80s sitcom, truly ahead of its time, because decades after Dorothy, Rose, Blanche, and Sophia made us laugh on television, now more and more baby boomers and older seniors are actually sharing their homes in real life, taking roommates, living in co-housing. It's all a response to intense financial pressures in retirement and to stave off intense isolation. So can sharing homes help Americans successfully age in place as we live longer? This hour on Point, seniors turn to roommates for companionship and cost-cutting, and you can join us. Have you thought about opening your home to a stranger to make ends meet or curb loneliness decades after college and your freewheeling 20s? Or are you doing that right now? Are you in a co-housing situation as a senior? Do you have a roommate as a senior? And if you're younger, would you live with someone? Would you live with an elder to squirrel away some cash to help out someone in need and perhaps even to learn something across that generational divide? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to start today in Denver, Colorado. Wendy Burkhart joins us. She's the founder and CEO of Silvernest, which matches primarily older people who are looking for roommates. Wendy Burkhart, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Happy to be here.
So tell me, what inspired you to create Silvernest in the first place?
Well, you know, I think like all great businesses, it really started out of a personal experience and witnessing the members of our family aging and not having as many choices as they might have wanted to age in place, and ultimately losing my father several years ago and having my mother be across the country and living on her own for the very first time in her life. That was really one of the largest inspirations for this.
Okay, and so how does it work? I mean, it's a service that matches elder Americans with roommates as they're seeking new living situations?
That's right. We have a platform that allows, I always joke and say, in some ways it's somewhat like a dating site in the sense that we actually pair folks based on compatibility. So it's a platform you can come in. You can actually list the available space in your home. Our system does the heavy lifting of actually matching folks and pairing them based on compatibility for a long-term living arrangement. And then we also plug in a sequence of tools on the back end to help folks navigate the experience of setting up the living arrangement and then also being able to manage the ongoing life cycle of that relationship. So everything from background screens are included to setting up auto rent payments. We also have mediation services and folks that can help you answer questions about how to prepare the home. And we also have access to legal counsel for many folks who may have questions about how to best prepare themselves and their home for this type of an arrangement.
Right. Well, so let me ask you right there, because one of the first questions I think people might have is it safe, right? Especially when we're talking about older Americans who may be vulnerable. I mean, they're frequently targets of scams, for example, and you know, other, and perhaps they feel physically vulnerable as well. So you mentioned background checks, but how do you assure safety here?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm proud to say that after having had the service available for the last 3 years, we've luckily seen mostly positive experiences through the platform. And I think what we've worked very hard to do is try to mitigate as much risk as possible. We start first by using a third-party identity verification service, which is incredibly robust, helping us understand both parties that are coming into the system. Then we do partner with a third-party background check provider to actually do a full misdemeanor as well as felony background search. We also check within that sexual offenses, you know, basically a very comprehensive background and legal perspective. And
Right.
then we also include in that a 5-year eviction history.
Okay, so you do a pretty thorough analysis then of who you may be matching with each other. Let me just let me ask you though, I suppose really one of the key questions is who's using the service?
Well, We have had some wonderful stories. The average profile of a homeowner or the individual with the space tends to be a female, generally average age about 65. We've had folks as old as 101 actually on the platform, which has been super fun. And then the average age of our renter tends to be right around 40, and that is actually split, right down the middle between male and female. So we see a lot of interesting pairings. They're not always golden girls sort of in their entirety. We do see folks that are pairing with having intergenerational pairings, so about 30% of our pairings are intergenerational in nature. So we really see a wide variety of relationships.
Okay. And in the future, Wendy, is this the kind of thing that you might turn to yourself?
You bet. Well, you know, interestingly enough, I had to relocate to San Francisco a year and a half ago, and I actually did exactly this for 4 months and lived in a bedroom of someone who was an empty nester. And so I shared space for about 4 months. And yes, I actually do not have children, so I think this is very much something in my future.
Well, Wendy Burkhart is co-founder and CEO of Silvernest, an online house-sharing service that pairs maybe older Americans, empty nesters, and other aging adults with compatible long-term housemates. Wendy joined us today from Denver, Colorado. Thank you so much, Wendy.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, let's turn now to Anne Glass. She's a gerontologist and professor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. She's a leading researcher in the field of senior co-housing and elder self-directed intentional communities. And she's with us today from Wilmington, North Carolina. Professor Glass, welcome to On Point.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
So take a step back with me, because we can talk a lot about, and we will talk more about the specifics of who is turning to sort of interesting new home sharing options. But how large of a trend is this? We know baby boomers are, 10,000 of them a day are entering retirement age and beyond. So is this a growing trend?
Well, Magna, it is, I think, and we're probably only at the beginning of it right now because, as you said, the baby boomers, we've always, and I am a baby boomer, I'll admit it, we've always been kind of turned the attention to whatever age group we are in. And so now that we're getting into this age group, we're going to change things here too, I think. And so part of it is coming from the baby boomers have seen the choices that their parents and grandparents had, and they're not really completely satisfied with those options.
Choices meaning
some people,
like nursing home care or others.
Right, right. So I think, and also the older population is really the most diverse population of any age group. So we need to have more different kinds of options for all the different people, because some people want to live where they have children around. Some people don't want to have children around. So we need to be creative and come up with some new options.
Well, so let's talk specifically then about what some of these options are. I mean, you heard Wendy Burkhart kind of give us what she's doing in terms of helping people find roommates or house sharing options. That's one thing. But there's also this whole co-housing movement. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Yes, absolutely. And first thing is, I do want to clarify, because there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, out there, and people get the idea of shared housing and co-housing mixed up. And to me, they are quite different. Shared housing is what Wendy was talking about, when you share an actual house and you have a room in somebody's house, whereas co-housing is a whole community or a neighborhood, you might think of it. Perhaps there'd be 25 units in each person or couple would have their own home, but they're built in a neighborhood around a common space, and there's typically a common house that they come together perhaps a couple times a week to have shared meals and such as that.
And so this is different than assisted living or even partially assisted living?
It's nothing like assisted living, no. Because assisted living is where you move in when you start to need a little bit of help with your activities of daily living. So it's in between independent living and the nursing home level. And co-housing is you would move in when you were completely independent, typically, and you would hope to be able to age in place and stay there until you die. And you could do that with the help of a home care aide, perhaps, or even hospice coming in at the end. But you would also have the support of your neighbors in the co-housing neighborhood, which would help a lot.
So it sounds like with co-housing and American seniors, What it's really answering to is a kind of a loss of community that perhaps many Americans face as they get older. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. And I think about it in terms of if you live in a suburban neighborhood, for example, you tend to drive into your garage at the end of the day and you put the door down and you may not even know the names of your neighbors on either side of you. And in a co-housing neighborhood, you would know all the people, like 30 people or whoever live in your neighborhood within a day or two. And this definitely builds, I mean, these kind of communities are intentionally built, physically designed, so that they promote social contact. And so you would know all your neighbors within a day or two, which is quite different than living in a suburban neighborhood or even in an apartment complex. Mm.
I love this idea of co-housing. And especially, I mean, I think the negative consequences, social, emotional, and medical of isolation that American seniors face is huge. And I want to talk with you a little bit more about that in a second. But before we take a quick break here, let's just give another nod to the Golden Girls and how they were ahead of their time. This is from the pilot of The Golden Girls, where Rose, played by Betty White, laments to Dorothy and Sophia about loneliness and what might happen if Blanche marries a potential suitor and they have to move.
It's not fair, you know. I mean, we get married, we have kids, the kids leave and our husbands die. Is that some kind of a test? You don't work that hard. You don't go through everything you go through to be left alone. We are alone, Dorothy. We really are. Our families are gone, and we're alone. And there are too many years left, and I don't know what to do. Get a poodle.
Well, maybe it's funny, but perhaps for some people, getting a dog isn't enough. So we're talking about alternative housing arrangements that American seniors are increasingly embracing. What's driving them to do that, what benefits, and what are the risks are. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about American seniors increasingly looking towards innovative housing situations to stave off loneliness, to deal with the financial pressures of retirement. Some of them are taking on roommates or becoming roommates themselves. Others are looking to the phenomenon of co-housing around the country. And we want to hear from you. Are you an American senior or a baby boomer who's thinking, well, you know what, maybe I don't want to live in a nursing home and I don't want to live alone, so I'm looking for something different? And if so, how has that worked out? And by the way, folks, I'm also curious to know if you think that looking for these alternative housing arrangements is an indication that somehow in our infrastructure or our social safety net that perhaps we're failing American seniors too. There's that downside that I want to address as well. And I'm joined today by Anne Glass. Excuse me. She's a gerontologist and a professor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. And Professor Glass, before I turn back to you, we've already got the phones ringing off the hook here. So let me let some callers in. Diana is calling from New Orleans, Louisiana. Diana, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How's it working out for you?
Good. Good. Nice weather down here. It's getting cool. We like it.
So tell me, why'd you call today?
Yes. I am 65, and I got a roommate. I hadn't had a roommate in a really long time, and it's almost always for financial reasons only, and it definitely still is, because I've got my family all around me in very near me, grandkids and kids and everything. But I was thinking about it because I had a twin bed given to me, and so I saw, you know, I looked around and said, well, maybe I should put somebody in that little room. And I had a dresser in there, empty closet, whatever. So I I looked on Craigslist, and I saw this guy who just, his picture just, he looked like, I mean, really honest, you know? Just like a really nice guy, I swear to God.
And did he turn out to be a nice guy?
He really, really did. And he gave me, he worked at one of the chemical plants here. He's married, but he lives far, you know, like an hour and a half away from work. And I live like, you know, half an hour at rush hour, really.
Well, Diana, I'm going to forgive me for interrupting you there, but I'm going to take it back from you there because, first of all, I'm glad to hear that it's worked out for you and in a situation that seems to work out for the person who's boarding with you and you as well. And I'm doubly glad that you got lucky about accurately judging the honesty of a person off their Facebook picture. So thank you so much for your call. But Anne Glass, let me turn back to you now. Diana sort of indicates to me that there are a lot of informal ways by which seniors have been looking for roommates or alternative housing arrangements. Do you have concerns about that?
Well, sure. As you mentioned in the beginning, and you could easily be taken advantage of, and especially somebody who is more frail and perhaps not thinking as straight as they used to think. So, yes, this is a concern, and that's where organizations like Silver Nest and some of the others that are popping up around the country can be helpful in doing those background checks and that kind of thing. And even if you did it informally, even if you met somebody and you thought they would be good, I think that should be kind of a standard practice to do. And they should be willing to do background checks and such as that. And then also, when you come into a situation like that, make some agreement, maybe have a contract where you lay out what you expect and what would be the kind of things that would make you have to move out, like if you started smoking in your room or something like that.
Mm. Well, let's go to Brooke, who's calling from Norfolk, Virginia. Brooke, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead, Brooke.
I'm calling because I'm in my 30s, and I've had a roommate situation going for a while, and I've had a couple of housemates who are much older, people who could be, you know, my parent or my grandparent. And I found that I was able to have really good relationships with them. You know, I would do a lot of rides and things like that. Got along really well. But the problem that I ran into was with mental acuity.
Mental acuity, okay.
People who, when they get older, who aren't necessarily diagnosable with dementia, but they're not sharp. They were.
Well, Brooke, your cell phone is breaking up on us, but I hear you making an important point, so thank you for your call. Anne Glass, I do wonder about this because, you know, perhaps it's actually good for the senior American who has a younger roommate. But Brooke there was saying, like, it was perhaps getting a little worrisome because it's something for family members to take on the responsibility of looking after someone who perhaps has less sharp mental acuity, to use Brooke's words. But do we have the, you know, infrastructure or preparation when that's going on with a roommate situation?
Well, perhaps that is going a little above what you typically expect of a roommate,
yeah.
Although there are also situations where a younger person perhaps lives in the big old house of an older person and they don't pay rent, but they help out. And the way they help out might be kind of being there and kind of checking on the person and making sure they're okay and helping with getting groceries and all those kind of things. So it could be part of the deal, so to speak, from the beginning, is that somebody who needs a little bit of help can get it in that way without having to pay for it. They're just using their extra space that they don't need to let somebody else live there.
Hmm. Well, I want to bring in another voice here. Rodney Harrell joins us. He's with us from Washington, and he's director of Livable Communities at the AARP Policy Institute. Rodney Harrell, welcome to you.
Hello.
So first, Rodney, let me ask you, I mean, we can talk about all the benefits of these alternative housing arrangements for American seniors, and I can see there are a lot of them. But let's confront one of the realities that might be driving people towards this situation. I'm seeing here, I mean, I'm just talking specifically about the financial vulnerability or fragility that many retiring Americans find themselves in, right? Because we've got many more Americans over the age of 65 still having mortgages to pay. A lot of them may have taken heavy losses to their retirement accounts following the financial crisis of 2008. And for those who rent, I'm seeing here, according to one study out of Harvard University, that the number of renters 65 and older is going to increase by 80% in the near future. So are we seeing here basically people are being driven to alternative housing situations simply because it's becoming living expenses in old age are becoming untenable?
That's certainly part of it. We've seen those increases in renting and older homeowners with mortgages. And so that historical kind of assumption that older adults are in their homes free and clear and wealthy and happy doesn't really apply to everyone. So, they've got to deal with these financial difficulties, and the housing crisis really never ended for many of us. At the same time, we face the fact that many of our homes and communities aren't really just designed for aging. And so we've got folks trying to make the best out of housing situations that might not be the best for them. And that gap in between what people need and what they have is filled in part by some of these options like shared housing.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about that. When you say they're not really designed for aging, are we talking about, infrastructure within the home, like stairs or having bathrooms that need modification, things like that? Or are you also talking about the fact that we have a lot of empty bedrooms, too?
We have that, and I'll even go further to say that our homes and communities aren't really designed for aging. And you think about, 200-plus years of development in the country, and we always had the assumption that there weren't that many people over 65. Well, sometime in the decade of the 2030s, we're going to have more people over 65 than under 18 for the first time ever. And what that means is that these years and building communities and housing a certain way doesn't necessarily fit our new reality and our growing and changing reality. And so we talked about some of the roommates that might help with some of those chores. Maybe they're getting groceries and those kind of things. Well, in part, that's because our transportation systems in our neighborhoods, suburban neighborhoods especially, aren't necessarily set up for people to get around if they're not driving. And yes, we have home designs that assume that you can get up a great deal of stairs, and that can be an issue. And of course, the cost that we talked about. So it's really a holistic kind of change that we need to make to more age-friendly, livable communities so that we can have the options that people need. And in the meantime, if you're in a home and it doesn't quite work for you, bringing in a roommate can help with some of those chores, some of those costs, and maybe some of the social isolation as well.
Yeah. So, Anne Glass, what do you think about what Rodney Harrell is saying there about we kind of need a more holistic change?
That's absolutely right. 100%. I agree. That's a big issue. And we don't have the walkability. I have my students in my class do walkability assessments and all. We don't have it set up so that, for example, I had an older cousin who lived in a very small town. And even when she was 90, she was able to go to the little grocery store in their town. But once that closed, that meant she became reliant on somebody else to go and get her groceries at the bigger grocery store in another town. So there are a lot of pieces like that that are missing in our country. And this social isolation, too, is a big issue. And there's more and more research that's showing that can be as bad as for your health as smoking cigarettes. They came up with 15 cigarettes a day. I don't know how exactly, but it's really, really bad for you, just like not exercising.
Right. I mean, so about that research here, I'm seeing here that there is a body of evidence that shows that one of the main things that keeps you mentally healthy or supported and physically even is reducing the amount of isolation and keeping connected with a community, that it's that important.
It is that important. That's one of the top things you can do for yourself. And I think, for example, of a relative who is living by herself in her home that she's been in for 60 years, and she's in her 90s as well, but she's there all day long. She may not see anybody or even talk to anybody on the phone, and she doesn't get any exercise either, and it's not clear 100% what she's eating. So that's a setup that's going to push her more quickly into having problems with confusion and that kind of thing.
I see.
It's not the ideal. And yet there are many, many people doing that all around the country, living by themselves like that.
So let's go to some more callers here. Everett is calling from Sarasota, Florida. Everett, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Thank you for taking my call. I love this topic. My wife and I, married 30 years, have been talking about this for the last 10 years. And in July, we had a good friend of hers from college and her daughters move in with us. So right now, we are in the house-sharing mode, but moving actively towards co-housing and intentional community. We see a way to add more of our friends to this. And I loved hearing Rodney talk about the holistic approach and its sustainability and shared resources. And and it's something we've envisioned for a long time, and now we're actively doing. And it's working out fantastic.
Everett, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Joseph, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Joseph, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. Great conversation. Quick question. We talk a lot about trying to find people who could cohabitate, with a senior, could help out. How about focusing on family? I know families don't always get along together, but I grew up in a household where we never really thought of putting my grandmother, as she aged, into a nursing home because we were able, to help out. In this day and age, things are becoming so expensive for young people. Rents are increasing. And as you've spoken about in prior episodes, young people are moving back home.
Yeah.
If we stretched our arms, to our older loved ones, I think we could find some nice avenues to help.
Joseph?
I didn't know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, no, Joseph, I really appreciate this question because I think it's an important one. And thank you so much for your call. Rodney Harrell, let me first turn that back to you because I think Joseph's getting at sort of an underlying issue here, which we should face, that it was just presumed a generation or two ago that family infrastructure would be maintained such that when you, as he was talking about, grandparents had people they could rely on, live with. And that for, many, many reasons, we don't necessarily have that to the extent anymore today. But should we be looking back towards somehow facilitating family assistance in living situations instead of co-housing or roommates?
Well, I wouldn't say it's instead of. I'd say it's in addition to. That I agree wholeheartedly that, for many of us that are able to have family nearby, that we can rely on, it's a great option. But by the way, I'd make sure that if you were going to have a home for your mother or other relative to move into, you think about the fact that do you have a bedroom on the first floor that they can use? Are the doorways wide enough that they might be able to get through with a mobility device or a walker, what have you? Are there, is there an entrance they can get in and out of? The design issues in your home might limit that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, many of us don't have those relatives nearby the country has become very spread out. And while we're seeing some trends that are showing that multi-generational housing, people of different generations might be going up, at the same time, there are literally millions of folks that don't live near their families. And this is one of those options that can help, fill that gap.
Right. And not to bring my own experience into this too much, but my parents live 3,000 miles away from me, and they're fine, for the moment. They're doing great. Hi, Mom and Dad. But they also have told me there's no way in the future that they want to live closer to me because they just don't want to deal with the weather, the winter in Boston. So, I mean, I don't mean to make light of the situation because I think it's just one example of how there are a lot of very important personal reasons for every family situation about why people may not be able to come together. But Anne Glass, your thoughts about that?
Yes, I think what we see is that all the academic literature talking about caregiving and such assumes that everybody has a family who's going to provide that care. But that's really not the case. And especially moving forward, the baby boomers had fewer children than past generations, and they're more likely to end up living alone for a variety of reasons. So that's one of the reasons that I got so interested in this elder co-housing model, because I wanted to see, and this is something that really hasn't been looked at very much, but how can older people help each other? and provide mutual support to each other. Because in our society, we tend to have this assumption that older people are, you know, dependent and they need services and they need help. But really, most older people are quite competent and quite able to help each other. Yeah. And a lot of what people need is neighborly behavior. That's it.
Hmm. Well, we are talking about the growing ranks of American seniors and baby boomers who are looking to new and different housing situations as they age. We've been talking about roommates, seniors taking on roommates or becoming roommates themselves. And as Anne Glass just mentioned, elder co-housing co-housing communities. We've got a lot of comments coming in. Chris Rue says, talking about co-housing in a community room and separate buildings for people. Jim says this is good for the gig economy. But Gorkul is telling us, young adults struggling to pay rent, rooming with senior citizens, what could go wrong? We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the growing numbers of American seniors and baby boomers who are looking to different housing options, whether it's taking on a roommate or living in a co-housing community, and whether they're doing it for financial reasons, because life is expensive, even and perhaps especially in retirement, to stave off isolation and to continue to build community into our older years. And we're joined today by Anne Glass. She's a gerontologist and professor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Rodney Harrell is also with us. He's director of livable communities at the AARP Policy Institute. And there are so many comments coming in online here. Let me just give you a couple of them. On Twitter, Andrea E. says, love this kind-hearted approach. Also good to remember that charity begins at home. There are probably relatives who have benefit from this too. On the other hand, John says, so instead of good jobs with good wages, pensions and adequate housing, the internet can match up adults with roommates. Great. Citizen James adds, integration, integration, integration. Do not section off the elderly in a, quote, nice place, swallowed in a parking lot, and set outside any walkable street network. Rodney Harrell, let me turn to you on that one, because you were mentioning earlier that it's not just an issue of the individual housing unit, but rather communities at large that need to change. Is Citizen James touching on that point?
Yeah, I think he's right. You know, I live in a county that was formed in the 1600s, and since then, we've been building communities around that kind of assumption that not that many people are aging. And so we should have the widest range of options that we should have. We need to kind of change that way of thinking and note that we don't need to create special things for older adults. That's not the ideal. The ideal is to have the wide range of options so that regardless of your age, you can fit where you need to. In part, we developed a livability index that helps people to understand and measure whether their communities have things that people of all ages and all incomes need, because it's just so hard to figure out how to get there.
Mm. Anne Glass, let me turn to you here. And I'm still thinking of John, the comment that John sent us about instead of good jobs, good wages, pensions, and adequate housing, we're just looking to the internet to solve what's a more fundamental social problem. What do you think about that?
Well, a couple things. One of the things is what I hear about when people hear the research that I do. Oftentimes they'll say, well, I've got some friends and we've been talking about that we would like to be able to live kind of close to each other so we could look out for each other. And these often are people that don't have children. And so whether you do that in a co-housing arrangement or whether you could even do that in an apartment building or a condo building, you could buy places close to each other or in a even in a subdivision, you could be in a where your yard's backed up to each other. So there are lots of ways that you could do this and kind of develop a family of friends is the way I think of it. So that's definitely an option. But on the other side, there are also people, there's more and more what are being called solo agers or elder orphans who really are out there on their own and are, if they have any family, are isolated from them. And some of them don't have friends who can come and stay with them or help support them. And so sometimes people are, you know, find themselves having to throw themselves onto the internet and see what they can find in the way of a roommate.
You know, I want to get to more calls here because this is something that is touching a lot of people's lives. But before I do that, Anne Glass, suddenly it occurred to me that there's a natural tendency to sort of have the center of gravity of a conversation like this tend towards, you know, cities or even larger towns because perhaps options for elder Americans are just greater in higher population density areas. But what are the, you know, what are the options for Americans living in more rural places for these kind of alternative housing arrangements?
Well, there definitely are fewer options in the rural settings, as you say. The idea of having a roommate or sharing your house with somebody could still work out in a rural setting, but you might not have quite as large a pool of people to pull from.
And so, Rodney Harrell, what do you think about that?
Yeah, and I think even in, you know, when you're in a small town, to our point about those livable, age-friendly communities, it's better to be closer to town to try to maybe make fewer of those compromises that you might have by being further out. It gets again to that point of there being compromises no matter what type of thing we're looking at. And in rural areas, the same principles apply, though, that you'd want help to try to address those shortcomings that come from where you actually are.
Mm. Well, let's go to more callers. Paul is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I live in Dayton, and I'm retired Air Force, but I have a son who lives in Anchorage, Alaska, and while we're visiting him at his house, just down the road, they had a sign that said one unit remaining, and I looked back there, and it talked about a co-op, and I went back and actually toured the facility with one of the residents there, and it was an older lady from Fairbanks, Alaska, who lived there, and they had a larger building. They had a community kitchen. They had community physical fitness facility in the main building, and they had smaller, I'd call them apartments, really small, about probably 400 or 500 feet. They weren't cheap, probably around $200,000. And then they had a community garden there, and it was all brand new, and it's not for profit. A few people put it together. To my knowledge, it's not for profit, but it really comes down to your ability to afford these kind of a planned community like that isn't cheap.
Paul, can I just take it back from you there? Because you're making an important point, and I wanted to ask Anne Glass about that. And Paul, thank you for your call. So for these co-housing communities, and he called it a co-op, but perhaps it was a co-housing community in Anchorage, Alaska, but was wondering about the expense of it, that this kind of living could be potentially too expensive and out of the reach for a lot of people.
Okay, well, first of all, there is such a thing as cooperative housing, mm-hmm. and I don't know if this is exactly the model that he saw in Alaska, but the cooperative housing model for older people is really dominant in the Midwest. And the way it's set up is people buy a share in the community, in the building, and then you have your own unit. But the people who live there run it themselves, make the decisions about how things are going to be handled, which is also a hallmark of the co-housing community, by the way. But in cooperative housing, there's also someone who works for the community to do manage things, you know, if there's repairs that need to be made and that kind of thing. And these are typically not for profit, and they are designed to be affordable. Whatever level that means, I don't know. But co-housing model, you're right, typically as it has come into being in the United States, it originated in Europe, and it's much more common there. But in the United States, it has tended to be a model that favors people with higher incomes. But even so, in the United States, one of the elder co-housing communities, for example, specifically targeted low to moderate income folks. So there are some options out there that are not don't require high incomes.
It sounds like we need more of them, though.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Affordable housing is a big problem everywhere.
At any age. But
at
I
any
mean,
age.
But given how so many seniors are, they're truly financially vulnerable because maybe Social Security is not covering the expenses they already have, including the rising cost of health care, that affordable housing is an even more pressing issue as we get older.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, there's no getting around it. And we also know that many, many people have not been able, or for whatever reason, have not put enough money aside in savings during their working life to accommodate them or support them for their period of old age, so to speak. And now that period of old age can be quite long, you know, a couple decades we could be talking about or more.
Well, let's go to Dakota, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So one of the points, I'm a human service student, and one of the things we talk about the most is by 2050, America is projected to have a higher elderly population than any other age group ever. And that's completely unproportionate to what we've experienced thus far. And so we're looking at co-housing as a viable option to solve that solution with some of the problems that they have. But we're looking at the increase of this need. And so a lot of what we've been talking about and stuff in school is getting more people into those helping professions.
Yeah.
But as far as co-housing in general, it's a very viable solution. But the co-communities are the most ideal because of the risk factor of social isolation being less than.
Right.
Another one of the big things with roommates is, you know, not everybody's going to be as lucky to find somebody online and go with their gut instinct and be right about that instinct. So maybe having other loved ones, you know, whoever's a part of your social network, to come in with you and interview those people or kind of assess how that would work out or if that works for you. That way,
to get family to help do the vetting. That seems like a really good idea, Dakota. Thank you so much for your call. Rodney Harrell, let me turn back to you here, because I don't know if you can help us answer one sort of lingering question that I've got about all of this, is that it seems to me that there's a lot of evidence that it's overwhelmingly senior women who are taking the lead in these sort of alternative housing arrangements. I'm looking at some AARP figures from 2013 that found that 4 million women 50 and older, 4 million were already living in U.S. households with at least two women in the same age group. And that it seems that overall there's a smaller interest from men in these housing arrangements. Do we know why that is?
I'm not sure that we know the full story. I mean, part of it, though, is that the larger part of the single older adult population is female. Men have been growing a little bit in that area in terms of the relative numbers, but women tend to live longer. And so there are more single women for that reason alone. Whether or not that means they're more open to some of these concepts, we're not sure. But we do know that the residents of co-housing as well are largely female. It's definitely something that's been taken up more by that side of the population.
Anne Glass, do you have a thought about that?
Well, just to build on what Rodney was saying, if you look at the housing arrangements for older adults, male and female, the males, even up into their 80s, are far, far more likely to still be living in, you know, at home with a spouse compared to women. So women are definitely at a disadvantage, and so they're having to be creative in how they deal with those years.
Mm. Well, let's go to Carol, who's calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Carol, you're on the air.
Yes. Thanks for checking in with me. I'm a seniors real estate specialist, and I'm a senior citizen. In fact, I'm on my way to my Medicare appointment to find out what my new Medicare plan is going to be. But the point is that I see so many people that could use some sort of forward thinking. And I know there's got to be, I know AARP has been involved with this, but there's got to be some sort of way to make this a movement and options for communities. Because you know, it's all about supply and demand in building in any community. And until it comes on the radar as a need, and also if they do build something and then I'll be quiet and go away, they should build something that can have multi-use. For instance, I look at the new dorms that are going up at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and they're like, you know, fourplexes, you know, four different rooms and a common space. I mean, there's got to be a million permutations and combinations that could work that even after, when I'm long gone and there aren't that many older people, they can be reused for something else.
Yeah, but Carol, can I just jump in here? So first of all, thank you so much for your call. But I have to say, I think what you're getting at here is really important, that there's always the rule of supply and demand. And my thinking is that with the huge number of baby boomers, this is a generation that has sort of disproportionate power in terms of making demands. Do you think that, like, just a sheer number of baby boomers could have an effect to changing the housing stock, or at least updating or giving us more of these kinds of communities? What do you think, Carol?
I think first they have to know about it, that it exists, that it's an option that isn't being used. And we have some wonderful apartment buildings run by nonprofits for seniors and things. But people who want to live in a little more of a home-like fashion, they don't know that this could exist. And besides that, by the time they get up there, they're trying to figure out what their kids want from them. They're trying to just figure out how to make their finances last. I think city planners, I think architects and people like that should try to help us put this on the radar. Right.
Well, Carol from Omaha, Nebraska, thank you so much for your call. Rodney Harrell, pick up on Carol's thought here in the last minute and a half that we have here. Are you hearing through the work that you do at AARP more cities, city planners, as Carol was talking about, trying to think about new ways of accommodating our growing ranks of seniors?
Absolutely. And I think Carol's spot on with everything she was saying. Now we have over 300 communities that have joined the AARP network of age-friendly communities. And these are places where the local leadership has committed to working with the community, developing a plan, and then implementing that plan over a five-year period of addressing these issues, including housing and transportation and other things, to try to create more of the communities that work for folks. But the big issue, though, that we have to think about is the fact that, yes, in 2030 or 2035, we're going to have this huge push for these kinds of options. But you can't change a housing stock overnight, so people aren't necessarily demanding now what they might need tomorrow.
Yeah, so we should be thinking ahead today. Well, Rodney Harrell, Director of Livable Communities at the AARP Policy Institute, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Anne Glass, gerontologist and professor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, thank you as well.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
And listeners, before we wrap up today, I want to let you know about this note. Be sure to tune in to our special broadcast of On Point from Madison, Wisconsin on Friday, because my colleague David Folkenflik is going to be taking a close look at the Great Lakes, exploring their beauty and the environmental dangers they face, everything from toxic algae to those Asian carp, invasive species. David is going to be talking with Wisconsin natives, and we want your input too. Photos, stories, memories, anything you want to share about the Great Lakes. You can share it with us all right now at onpointradio.org. And when you're there, let us know what you think about today's show as well, about alternative living arrangements for American seniors. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, and Miriam Wasser, with help from Madeline D'Angelo, Barkley Palmer, and Lexi Peary. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.